Okay, welcome everybody to the next Academy of Management Review Origin Series podcast, YouTube, in which we get to interview authors of upcoming papers or recently published papers. In this case, it's actually a paper that has been published, but it's still very new and hot off the press. The title of the paper is The Circadian Theory of Paradoxical Leadership. And the authors are Stefan Falk at the University of Sydney, David Waldman at Arizona State, and Chris Barnes at the University of Washington. Fascinating paper. I'm excited to dive into it and understand a little bit about what was the impetus behind writing this paper, how it evolved and developed. But before we do, let's just meet the three authors who are with us as part of this discussion. So, Stefan, if we can start with you and you can just introduce yourself, a little bit about your background, where you're at, and what your research identity is.
Yes, thanks, Greg. So my name is Stefan Falk. I'm originally German, and I'm currently at the University of Sydney. Joined Sydney in 2014, so it's upcoming 10 years now. I'm a professor of management, which is a pretty new thing to say for me because I just got promoted in January, so I still get to used to that. And my research, we focus a lot on psychological processes and organizational behavior research, but my focus is more on underlying physiological processes. So I'm looking at the biological foundations of organizational behavior, of leadership, with a specific focus on circadian rhythms, chronotypes, but also neuroscience, so broader physiological aspects. And we'll talk about a little bit more about this later, maybe, but I'm a past chair of the Academy of Management Organization and Neuroscience Interest Group, where David is currently the program chair. So this is an initiative where we are trying to support this type of very new biology-based research.
Awesome. Thank you. David, can we get a little bit of your background?
Okay. I'm a professor of management and something called the Dean's Council, distinguished scholar, and executive co-director of something called the Global Center for Technology Transfer at Arizona State University. That's a mouthful. And my basic research area is leadership. So I've been doing leadership research now, I hate to say it, for just about 4 decades. And in leadership in a lot of different ways, at different levels in organizations. I'm obviously interested in something called paradoxical leadership. Done some work in something known as the neuroscience of leadership, and hence my association with that group that Stefan just talked about. So that's me.
Awesome. Thank you. And Chris, what about you?
Well, I'm here at the University of Washington in Seattle. My research focuses mostly so far on the relationship between sleep and work, although I am trying to broaden my perspective to something we call human sustainability, which would include sleep, but lots of other topics relevant to human sustainability. So Stefan and I had conversations unfolding over years about circadian rhythms and how does that influence workplace outcomes, and that kind of drew us to this project.
Awesome. Well, thank you. So can you give us it's probably not going to be 1 minute because there's a lot happening in this paper, but the short version of what this paper is about. I think the title is quite revealing, A Circadian Theory of Paradoxical Leadership. But take us a few steps down the rabbit hole of where that leads us, Stefan.
Yeah, it is an incredibly complex paper, but you can actually boil it down to a very short summary. And that is, paradoxical leadership is this idea that leaders face paradoxical tensions. They have to engage in leadership behaviors that simultaneously that need to go together but don't really go together. And when we looked at the paradoxical leadership literature, we noticed that a lot of the existing research kind of demonstrated that when leaders engage in paradoxical leadership, they tend to get better outcomes. Their followers are more proactive, more adaptive, more creative. But they never really explained how leaders can do it. And it's an important question because it's a paradox after all, and these things don't go together easily. So what they would do is empirical research, if the leader engaged in paradoxical leadership, then this would be the outcome without really explaining how they can do it. And what we do in this paper, we draw on two perspectives. We draw on a temporal perspective and a circadian biological perspective to explain or to develop a model how leaders can engage in paradoxical leadership. And the temporal perspective essentially tells us or demonstrates, based on what we call performance episodes, how it can be done. And the circadian perspective tells us when it can be done, when leaders and followers should engage in different types of behaviors. So it's a combination of these two. And these are the three main literatures we are drawing on. It's the paradoxical leadership literature. It's the literature on time and temporal processes. And it's the chronobiology sleep literature that we are bringing together in this paper.
Awesome. Thank you.
Let me throw in an analogy, and it's going to be kind of a weird analogy, but I want you to bear with me. Again, the paper is about trying to put together paradoxical leadership within what we call leadership episodes. Mm-hmm. Right? That term we use a lot. So leadership tends to occur in episodes or handling scenes or issues that kind of form a coherent whole. So an analogy that I sometimes like to use with people when they've asked me about this paper is what I call the Tony Soprano theory of or method of paradoxical leadership. And my co-authors have never heard this before, so brace yourselves, folks. If you remember in The Sopranos, if you've watched the series The Sopranos, Tony Soprano at times with a leadership, if you want to call it leadership, a leadership episode, he would be both extremely tough, but then also very supportive within the same episode. So, for example, he might beat somebody up or be very threatening towards an individual, and then cap that off, though, with some kind of supportive behavior. Like, I remember a scene in a restaurant where he confronted this young man with his girlfriend who was wearing a baseball cap. He didn't like it, baseball cap. And he went up to his table in a very menacing way, stared at him as if he was going to, you know, take his head off if he didn't take the cap off. The guy took the cap off, and what did Tony Soprano do? That wasn't the end of the episode. He also ordered them a very fancy bottle of wine. Now, he did this a number of times in the seven-year series. So if you think about it, these are two very different forms of behavior that he saw going together. They're interdependent. In other words, you need both of them to make it work, right? All forming an episode, a leadership episode.
So
if I can chime in here, Greg.
Yeah, if you can elaborate on the circadian aspect of that for us, or maybe integrate that, because that makes the paradoxical element very salient. And then where does the sort of
circadian is an additional element about how to make this episode work better. That's not really evident in the Tony Soprano analogy or metaphor, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I brought up the Tony Soprano thing is just to show you that two very different forms of influence behavior, and at its core, that's what leadership is, right? It need to go together, even though it seems like there's no way they can go together, in order to form an overall leadership episode. Now, what we did is add on this layer on top of this of understanding circadian rhythms to making these episodes work.
Yeah. What does that entail, Chris? For a moment here. Yeah, I think so. This paper is a bit more complex than the projects that I'm typically involved with. I usually prefer to be more on the simple end of the spectrum. But one neat thing about having a complicated paper is it means there are multiple layers that you can focus on. And so for me, the layer that kind of sticks out as most relevant to my own work and most interesting to me is sort of the ebb and flow over time of how leaders and followers interact. So leaders and followers might have different times of day which they're at their best or at their worst. And so rather than treating that as fixed, we say, well, these are opportunities for them to pass the baton back and forth. And so as they pass this baton back and forth in alignment or maybe misalignment with their circadian rhythms, this provides some very interesting context to talk about how leaders and followers interact And so I see us getting to the paradox from that lens, where over a period of time, as we ebb and flow back and forth, the leader is both taking charge and delegating. And in a big enough block of time, you can say they've done both of these things. But for me, the interest is more in the given moment. Where is that baton based on decisions made? Maybe a smart leader would pass the baton when they're at their worst to a team member who's at their best. So all of these elements are present in the paper. It's just kind of a matter of what is your focus? What is your interest?
And so it comes down to optimizing your opportunities for leadership with this paradoxical lens, that there's going to be times where it makes sense to be tough, and you're going to be better at being tough or making complex decisions or grappling with nuance at certain times. And at other times, you're going to be better off shooting the breeze or delegating or being a little bit more flippant with people or maybe more connective with people in certain ways.
So, you know, if I was thinking about The Soprano, and I'll leave it behind after this, okay, example, because maybe it's not the best example, but people can identify with it. If you're going to be the tough guy, you need to be really, you know, at your peak, probably, you know, both physically and mentally, because is it the right time to be the tough guy? Is it the right situation to be the tough guy? But to be more supportive, you know, maybe you don't have to be at your circadian peak for that, you know, that aspect of the paradox.
Yep. Yeah, so talk to me a bit about the genesis of this paper, Stefan. Where did it start?
I think it's important. So the thing with paradoxical leadership is this risk of being stuck in the middle. So paradoxical leadership, for example, is this idea to be in control and to let go of control. And there's that risk that you always provide a little bit of flexibility and autonomy, and you're always a little bit in control. So you do both a little bit, but you never really focus on both poles of the paradox. So paradoxical leadership is really about really fully letting go of control and providing your followers with autonomy and flexibility, and sometimes really absorbing control, right? And so this idea of a leadership episode can be quite flexible. These episodes can be very long. They can be actually they can go on over several days. But the idea is that within an episode, you emphasize both poles to the same degree. And for some people, it's easier to let go of control. And for some people, it's easier to be in control. For some people, it's easier to be the tough guy and be distant, because they don't like these warm, interactive relationships with followers. For some people, it's easier to be warm, and being tough is the hard thing. And that is all in the paper. It's not just that you need to do these different things and that you need to do them at different times, depending on your circadian rhythm or your chronotype, but also your individual preferences and individual differences. So that all builds on each other, and that's why the paper is so incredibly complex. And I'm really surprised we managed to squeeze this all into one paper. So you asked about the how the paper came.
I'll come back to that question in a moment. I just want to make the point that the fact that this is sort of complex and there's quite a few moving parts to it, and you're overlaying leadership theory with sort of theory about time and time of day and sleep and how individual differences might exist in that domain, are one of the reasons that I think AMR or a conceptual paper is appropriate here. Because if you were to attempt to empirically unpack all of this in a single study, it would be near impossible. But you need that foundation to conceptually think about it, draw on what we've understood from elsewhere, to integrate these different things. Yeah. So it's the type of paper that lends itself to sort of theoretical or conceptual thinking to lay a foundation for people to go and test and elaborate on different elements of it. And so that's why it makes sense.
Yeah. One way to look at it is that we got down in the weeds, so to speak, in terms of how paradoxical leadership would play itself out, taking into account circadian theory. So if you look at the history of paradoxical theory, it basically started off with people like Wendy Smith and Marianne Lewis, a very classic piece in AMR, I think in 2011. And writing about just paradoxes in general in organizations. Then several years later, some people, including myself, came along and said, well, this can be applied to the individual leader level. And the way that you apply that, this is very broadly speaking, is that leaders need to simultaneously, over time, take into account in a harmonious way both ends of the paradox. Period. That's all we had said. Okay. And so we came along with if you're asking about the motivation here, is to try to get a little bit more down in the weeds about on a day-to-day, basis, taking into account people's circadian rhythms. By the way, not just the leaders, but also the followers in this paper, that we're actually I think getting into the real messiness of what good paradoxical leadership would be all about.
So how did this assembled team come about? What was the, when did you connect with each other? How did you connect with each other and how did you start talking?
Yeah, so this is my second AMR actually on the topic. So in 2017, we published a paper on chronotype diversity in teams, which was a Teams paper. And it turned out that Chris was a reviewer on that paper, not very surprisingly, because that's really his core field. And obviously he's the expert in the area. So I always wanted to do work with Chris. And that 2017 AMR was on teams and how when team members have different circadian rhythms, how it plays out in team dynamics. And I wanted to write a paper on leadership because this paper doesn't talk about leaders. And I was always thinking that has important implications to leader-follower interactions. So the 2017 AMR is a teams paper. This is a dyadic paper. And so, yeah, Chris and I talked and then I wanted to do something on leadership, but I couldn't find the angle. We were playing around with different ideas where in leadership we could apply it. And then I started talking to David about the topic, who I knew from the Academy of Management Organization Neuroscience Interest Group. And David then saw that application to paradoxical leadership.
So you started off with the sort of chronotypes and circadian sort of aspect to it. And then paradoxical leadership was the thing that allowed it to all come to life or to give it a framing that sort of began to make sense of how you could disentangle the opportunity for sort of different leadership opportunities.
I think Chris was probably in the conversation maybe a little bit before me, right, Stefan?
Yeah, Chris and I have been talking about a couple of different projects, and that was one of them. So, yeah. Now, essentially, the very beginning of it was many, many years ago, I was sitting in my car in Europe listening to BBC Radio, and they were talking about circadian rhythms and had no idea what this was. And I just thought, oh, that's cool, So, and I wanted to know a little bit more about it because I thought that must have implications, and I haven't heard about it. And it's funny. When we started submitting the first papers on the topic, including the 2017 AMR, the editor wrote us like, I had to look up what circadian rhythms are. I had no idea what it is, but it sounds really cool and interesting. And we still get these reactions up until today because it's still very relatively unknown. And I think there's so many applications in this very fundamental human trait that explains so much of what we do on a daily basis. And then the thing is, what I do a lot of my research and Chris as well is bringing research from very different areas, from very different fields into management. And then that's this translational aspect that you have to find that conversation where you can make a contribution. And that's where you need really these experts, topic experts like David, who really knows the discussion in the management literature and the leadership literature really well and can see and can connect these things. So this is really a team type of work where you need different skill sets that are complementary.
And I sort of knew about circadian rhythms a little bit before coming into contact with Stefan. Circadian rhythm is almost like in some ways a commonsensical thing. I don't know about you, Greg, but I'm a total lark in the terminology. I'm not an owl. If you ask me to do heady type work or teach or whatever in the evening, forget it. My cylinders are clicking on about 50% in my brain at that point in time. It's because of my circadian rhythm. I can't do it.
Yeah, no, so, I 100% identify with it in myself. And that's what I found so intriguing reading through your paper was, although I'm not sort of in a true leadership position, but I could envisage myself optimizing if I was in a leadership position, or even optimizing my output of my day sort of in line with the way you were talking about these episodes. So I found it fascinating.
But I could probably do some delegation if I in a leadership role or certain other things in the evening, you know, and that was also highlighted in the paper. There are certain things that don't require you to be at your peak as a leader that you can do when you're not at your peak. So it's not like you're a zombie, you know, that you can't do anything.
Yeah. Chris, what did you want to bring?
What's interesting about this team and this project is that we, as you mentioned, we bring these different perspectives and different sources of expertise. And so I think part of the challenge, especially for Stefan as the leader of the project, was to bring these brains together. So kind of from the beginning, I was trying to pull us in the direction towards simplicity and towards focusing on circadian rhythms. And David was pulling us in the direction of paradoxical leadership and complexity. So David and I, you know, there's lots of mutual respect and we're working on this project and making lots of progress, but getting these two perspectives into the same paper, that's kind of where Stefan was sitting. Like I can imagine him, you know, thinking this through, like, how do I pull these different perspectives, these different parts of the paper into one paper? And for me, it almost looks like there are two papers here. And you can see where some of the bases of those different knowledge bases come from. And I think that's the challenge of doing this kind of work. When you have people that start off with different assumptions, different language, different concepts, and if you can bring them together successfully, well, there's a high reward for doing so. But man, the slog to get to that point, I think, is a greater challenge when you're trying to do that. And so my hat's off to Stefan for being able to manage this process and actually weave these pieces together in a way that kind of makes sense at the end. And I remember saying several times throughout this, like, I'm not smart enough to have done this paper on my own. I don't think I'm a good enough writer to have written this paper on my own, even if I was smart enough to get all the concepts. Stefan was the key to making this whole thing work.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with what Chris just said.
So what were some pragmatic things that you did, Stefan, in terms of sort of navigating this paradoxical leadership world and this sleep and circadian rhythm world, and then this whole notion of time that sort of can connect the two? Pragmatic things in terms of bringing reading and familiarizing yourself with both writing and bringing them together, and then integrating both Chris's and David's perspective into the paper you were leading or helping craft.
I think it's very important. It's what I tell my PhD students as well. It's very important to have a very clear focus where you want to go. Otherwise, you get lost. You can go in so many different directions. And if you explore all of them, you just go nowhere. So you have to really be, you know, you prune very aggressively and say, is this really relevant to what I want to say? And if not, it has to go out. And that is where the AMR reviewers and editors are actually very helpful. So my experience with both papers I published in the journal was the process was very developmental, very helpful. I had Sherry Thatcher as my first editor, associate editor, and then Abby Shipp, and both gave very good direction. That was extremely helpful. And the review as well, they were going a little bit apart. They were more or less pointing in the same direction. And this was really it guided us. And I know Chris is a bit critical about how we have moved away from this. Initially, the paper was a circadian paper very much. And now the paper is a paradoxical paper, right? So to some extent, we followed the lead, the reviewers and the editors' lead here, in terms of where we go with the paper, right? And yeah, giving us that direction and then very focusing on what the core message is helps then to make sure to integrate these different perspectives. But what then happens is that the reviewers keep coming up with new ideas, and they say, okay, but you know, we have now we have the paradoxical aspect, how this works, and we have covered how it works with the leaders' different circadian rhythms, and then we have covered how it happens, how it works with different leaders with different chronotypes. And but now let's throw in the follower. What is if the follower has a different circadian rhythm? And then now let's throw in situational leadership, because sometimes the situation just demands us to do certain things, and it doesn't matter what the circadian rhythm of the leader and the follower is. And you just keep building on top of each other and off top of each other. And not every project will be succeeding in that, because it may not actually work. And that's the advantage of conceptual work, is you have a lot of flexibility in crafting it, but you may also end up in a corner where you can't get out, and it doesn't really come together, and your idea doesn't really, you know, work out. So there's a lot of moving parts in there, but keeping that focus on what your core message is, I think, helps me a lot.
I think one thing that we did, that or Stefan did, that really helped out, is that we kept having a lot of pictures, a lot of graphs, a lot of figures that he would put in front of us. So it wasn't just a bunch of words or box and arrow kind of models. If you notice, we have figures in the paper that...
Oh, the figures jump off the page on the paper, because they're so, yeah, they're like, they just make everything sing.
Right. And that helped. It made us sing too, me and Chris. It made us, you know, understand things. And those were drafted by Stefan, those pictures. So it really helped the conversation and get us focused.
Yeah, it allows the timepiece to come out. It allows the right sort of job demands elements to become more evident, and to see how things flow. So were you sitting there intricately constructing those and then putting them in front of your co-authors, Stefan? Was that sort of your approach? You were working through some of the nuance, yeah, and then sort of testing it with them.
Yeah. So it took a lot of thinking and trying, and also the table where we have these different leadership behaviors that are more or less demanding, and integrating them into the model and in many iterations. The visualization really helps to stay on top of the complexity of the ideas. It is very painful to integrate it all, and the reviewers tend to push you to visualize things, but I think it is really helpful. And yes, so I would draft them, and then I would send them to Chris and David and ask them if they make sense. And it's also this understanding that you don't have to have always these old school arrow boxes. There's a lot of flexibility how you can visualize your ideas, and some ideas just don't lend themselves towards the arrow box kind of approach, because they're just three-dimensional, you know. So It allows you to be creative as well, which is great, which I like about this whole process.
Yeah. I think an underrated use of figures in an AMR is to simply describe the concepts more than to map out a model, which is typically what we would see figures used for, but just to really get readers to understand what is the concept itself. I think maybe other AMRs that have done well do similar things, where they just say, okay, here's the idea. Now let me create a different kind of figure with a different structure than we're used to seeing. But after seeing that figure, then you can say, okay, now that I understand that figure, it helps me understand the concept. And from there, we can go to a model and look at the connections across the concepts.
That's a fascinating insight, that we try and almost push our figures too far, try and incorporate too many moving parts, as opposed to just going back to, have we helped our readers understand the fundamental concepts? How did it change from the first submission, as you were having this sort of heavy influence of both the editor and the reviewers? What were in which sort of directions were they primarily pushing you? I think you might have alluded to moving more towards the leadership and the circadian becoming part of the explanation for the leadership. But what were some of the sort of things that evolved as you went through the review process?
Yeah, so I'll jump in here and say, like, this is where I have to give David credit, because he wanted this to be a paradoxical paper kind of from the start. And we had some of those elements, but the reviewers were like, we really like the paradoxical elements, really, really bring those out. And I was kind of resistant to that, because I have sort of mixed feelings about paradoxical leadership and what that means and how we understand it. So I kind of was dragged kicking and screaming through these evolutions. But that is what the reviewers asked us to do. And moving that direction, I think, brought out a different way to add value to the paper.
And I think it highlights that a bit of tension in an author team can actually be a good thing if you can manage it appropriately and allow that tension to be constructive and creative as opposed to just destructive. And so if you can manage that, I often think we'll end up with better conceptual papers where there is a bit of back and forth and people trying to stake a claim around certain ideas.
At the core of a paradox is this notion of tension. Mm. And how, you know, oftentimes we get upset with tensions. We don't like tensions. But the reality is that out of tensions, some good things can happen. And it's definitely true in leadership. You know, some people say, well, I'm either going to be extremely supportive or I'm going to be more, task oriented. And the idea really is, you know, those two basic concepts in leadership. The idea is that both of them are important. You can't just be one way or another.
Yeah.
And the idea, you know, is to bring them together. Now, you know, situational leadership would say, well, it just depends on the situation. So under some context, some situations, I'll be more task-oriented, let's say. Other situations, more supportive. Paradoxical leadership says, no, you know, in general, you should try to integrate these two things as we move over time. So anyway.
Now,
there's always tension there when you do that, when you try to integrate the two. There's bound to be tension.
Have any of you tried to or shared this with whether it be MBA students or executives or people in other positions of leadership where you've sort of either alluded explicitly or implicitly to the ideas that you can think more carefully about your job demands and your day and when you're optimized and when you're suboptimized? And if you have, what's been the sort of more pragmatic reaction to your ideas as opposed to the scholarly reaction of reviewers, but to people who are experiencing these demands and having to navigate their day and their rhythms with regards to these demands?
Yeah, so I'm teaching a MBA course, which is called Physiology of Leadership, and it's an elective. So people can elect this course, and it's about talking about a lot about, you know, like how you can manage your body and your followers' body in a way that you get the best outcomes. And the people who elect this course are typically people who are very interested in health and well-being. So they do all the right things. They work out, they eat well. You know, but then, you know, if you want to be good at work, if you want to be a good partner and dad or mom, and if you want to be healthy, something has to give. And what always gives, the one thing they don't consider is typically sleep. So you have to cut down somewhere. So of the topics that I teach in this course, which is about burnout and nutrition and all these things, sleep and circadian rhythms are resonating most with the students. And circadian rhythms and chronotypes in particular, because somehow we all have, it resonates with people because they know what they are. Most people know whether they are more like morning or evening types. But we know from Chris's research, for example, that we often assume that everybody else is like us. So morning types just assume everybody else is also best in the morning. And they can't understand that some, like leaders, for example, they can't understand that some of their followers may show up later and perform better later during the day, you know? And this, like I had a lot of my students coming to me afterwards and saying, now I know why my 9 a.m. morning meeting on a Monday doesn't work, you know, why half of my team isn't there, you know. And a lot of evening types, actually, that is, we estimate it's about almost 40% of the population are evening types, living in a society that is very much morning biased, say, thank you for pointing this out. The person who's first in the office in the morning is not necessarily the most productive, the most diligent person, you know? So I think it is often very simply just pointing these things out is eye-opening to many people in leadership positions to better understand how they self-function, how their followers function, that there are significant differences between followers. And that can be incredibly helpful in managing your people.
My last doctoral student that I had, was your total owl. You know, she'd be working and being, and still to this day, she's now second year into an assistant professor job. She works by far best at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I'm the opposite. And I learned that fairly early on. And, you know, some people would say, well, my God, you can't work with her because she's not like you. But that's not true. As long as you're just cognizant of, you know, of this other person and the way that they operate, individualized consideration, if you want to use that term, you can do what's in our model, basically, in this paper. The leader does not have to be the same as the follower in order to achieve success, in other words, when it comes to circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
So, Greg, Chris, how do you ask if we deliver content from this AMR to, say, MBA students, I would say there are some nuances from this paper that maybe not be, they're not quite ready for MBA crowds just yet. But I do think it derives from a much larger literature, even outside of management, on sleep and circadian rhythms that is very well developed. And so I do bring in a lot of that content into my classes with my MBA students. I devote a full session to sleep. And now I have a new session that I developed on shift work. So I guess probably similar to some of Stefan's content. And I think it's really neat to be able to have that science from outside of management to bring into management, and it's new within management. So there's only, you know, a handful of papers that are in our core journals that are applying and extending those ideas in our domain. So we're at this weird nexus of like old, mature, really well-developed stuff, but also a lot of novelty as we're seeing how this looks through our lens in our own contexts. So it's great to have both of those, where I feel like there's a sound foundation of science to draw from. But on the research front, I feel like there's just so much stuff to be done. Like there's so much open field to play for circadian rhythms. And I don't know a lot of topics where you get both of those at the same time, well-developed science and a lot of space for novelty, which makes this topic especially fun for me.
Yeah. And this is why I like AMR as an outlet, is because it prompts us or provides a space for people like yourselves to push your thinking, to say, what's the next frontier to thinking about these ideas, and sort of integrating different perspectives. And I think that's what this paper is an exemplar of, is bringing two almost parallel but non-integrated literatures together and saying when we combine them, we get very interesting perspectives coming out, and perspectives that you probably wouldn't be able to tease apart empirically without multiple studies. But if we just take what we know from each area and what is sort of quite empirically sound and conceptually robust from each area and bring them together, you get very, very interesting and nuanced and valuable perspectives coming out. So I think it's a great example of that, and will be referenced for that going forward. But then also the opportunities that come from this to saying, how can we think about future leadership studies, accounting for circadian rhythms, accounting for job demands, whether it's experience sampling going forward and using this as a basis, or whether we're bringing people into the lab at all sorts of weird times. I think that it just lends itself to so much. As you think about this and this paper and where you would like to see it picked up and utilized by other scholars and or practitioners in the future, what are your desires as to what it might lead to going forward? Let's start with you, Stefan.
Yeah, again, so I think we are kind of contributing to three literatures. So I think it's already well received in the paradoxical leadership community, which is a rapidly developing field in leadership. And it's the first, I think, deeper conceptual piece on paradoxical leadership. And I think there's a lot in the paper just about bringing paradoxical leadership research together. If you don't even consider the circadian stuff, there's a lot of integration of the empirical work that David and others have done before that are relevant. Then the field, the research on time and temporal processes. So there's a reason we had Abby Shipp as our associate editor. She just had this, I think, special issue on temporal processes and AMR. And this notion that there are fluctuations in behavior. So we know leadership, that within person fluctuations of leadership can be as big as between person fluctuations. And we have to move away from that assumption that there's a leader that behaves in the same way. You know, there's dramatic fluctuations. And circadian theory is a temporal theory that works at an extreme micro level. It works at the day level. So it can work across days as well, but the main focus is on a single day and what happens when during the day and how much variance you have within one day where this kind of approach can make a contribution. And then obviously the research on biological foundations of organizational behavior, of leadership, really understanding how our fundamental biological, physiological predispositions drive us. As I said at the beginning, we often talk about psychological processes in OB in particular, but underlying these psychological processes are important physiological processes. And I think that the important thing is to understand, when do we really need to understand these physiological processes, and when is it sufficient to just focus on the psychological processes? And I use the working memory as an example. So working memory is a cognitive psychology concept that essentially tells us about how much information a person can store at any time and has available to make decisions or to manage emotions. But underlying this working memory is a brain region, which I believe is the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. That's the brain region where these working memory processes are presumed to occur. And the big question is, do I, as a management researcher, really need to know which brain region is involved, or is it sufficient that I know how it works? You know, and sometimes it is important and sometimes it's not. And this is where this biological perspective can be important. And David can talk more about that, but it can be very informative, and it can sometimes also be just too much and not relevant.
Yeah. Well, thank you. David, where would you like to see this paper picked up and carried forth and utilized?
Sort of like what you said before, Greg, that, you know, there's no way that a single study could test out everything that we have in our model. And as a matter of fact, you know, I've thought about it a little bit and said, you know, even without the paradoxical aspect to it, if we just take, I think it's our table one, and ask, maybe do like event sampling or experience sampling type of research, and just see, are leaders actually doing things related to these dimensions that we talk about in that table at the right time, you know, from a circadian point of view? And if they don't, what ends up happening? Do they have negative outcomes? Now, that's not even a paradoxical point of view, but it's something that could be gleaned from our approach here that a particular researcher might pick up on that we've never really, you know, I don't even recall seeing in the literature any kind of treatment of, you know, these different types of leadership styles or behaviors and when it's appropriate for a leader to attempt them versus not attempt them based on circadian patterns. So even that, you know, you could take away the paradox layer. I think that would be an interesting study in and of itself.
Yeah. Thanks. What about you, Chris?
Well, I'll probably reveal my bias here. But generally, what I love to see in our research literature is ultimately for us to arrive at a place where we have interventions. I love to study the basic phenomena and help us understand the what's going on at a fundamental level. But at the end of the day, if we want to be of value to our stakeholders, we need to be able to intervene, to be able to improve these outcomes. So I don't know if it's the next step or if it's the 10th step, but at some point I would love to see some researchers examine interventions that we can engage in that will help leaders and followers work together effectively, despite some challenges that are presented by circadian rhythms that are not fully synchronized or in alignment. I think so far, Stefan in particular has done a great job at pointing out the issues that can arise. But at some point, we have to be able to solve those issues. And so I'm not sure that we have polished interventions ready for this yet. But I would like to see the literature get there over the course of the next few years.
I absolutely love that as a carrot for sort of pulling this work forward and for encouraging others to pursue it, is that sort of that notion of what David said is understanding it a little bit better and seeing whether it empirically manifests as you think it might, but then the possibility of an intervention to say, well, what might we do about it and what are the benefits we get from that? That's very cool.
I could see potentially following up on what Chris said, you know, some kind of intervention where people in leadership positions are coached to understand and to actually enact behaviors that are more in line with their circadian rhythms. You know, that's a fairly simple intervention and not even on the paradoxical side of things, but still important.
Yeah.
And then whether it's coached or to coach the paradoxical, putting it all together.
Yeah. Or you just facilitate a discussion between a leader and three members of their team and they figure stuff out. And so, I mean, I think it's just fascinating. Well, thank you. Thank you for, you know, navigating across continents and time zones to be willing to talk with us. Thank you for engaging in, I mean, we really do have three accomplished scholars coming together to write this paper, bring together different angles and perspectives. And I think it's a great example of what can happen when that happens. And getting a little bit of an opportunity to talk about the process of doing that is a great contribution to our little podcast series here. So I appreciate you making the time, making the effort to be here and to revealing your perspective and insights on what happened in developing this paper with us.